discuss his wife's problems. Paul doesn't like her. That's part of it. She's not a prostitute anymore, but she expects everyone to look at her and treat her like one. Rage shot through him. Did Paul tell you that? She shook her head. She told me the first night, and loudly enough for Mama to hear. Tears filled her eyes. What are we going to do about her, Michael? The way she holds Ruthie breaks my heart. Michael knew Miriam was going to have plenty to do in helping John and Elizabeth get this place going. He couldn't ask her to make frequent visits to his place so Amanda would know the affection was real and not a matter of convenience, and the girl was already looking on Paul like he was a Greek god come down from Olympus, despite his flaws. He knew Paul found the girl attractive as well. It was clear in the studied way he avoided her. Whatever way it went, Miriam's loyalties were going to be put to a hard test. John took out his fiddle. No quiet, mournful hymns this time, but Virginia Reels. Michael caught hold of Angel and whirled her around. Being in his arms was heady stuff. Angel's heart raced. She could feel heat pouring into her face and didn't dare look up at him. Jacob danced with his mother, while Miriam danced around the clearing with Ruth. John lifted his booted foot and gave Andrew a shove toward his sister Leah. Paul watched, leaning indolently against the cabin wall. He looked so alone, Angel pitied him. "It's the first time I've danced with you," Michael said. "Yes," she said breathlessly. "You're very good."
"And that surprises you," he laughed. "I'm good at a lot of things."
His arm tightened around her, speeding up her pulse even more. Jacob came and bowed to Angel, and Michael relinquished her with a grin. She glanced around the yard, and they danced. It only took one look at Miriam to know she wanted to dance with someone other than her baby sister or younger brothers, but Michael had danced with Elizabeth, Leah, and Ruth, and left Miriam alone. An unpleasant sensation stirred in Angel's belly. Why did Michael avoid Miriam? Was he afraid to get too close to her? When he came back to claim her from Jacob, she pulled her hand away. "You haven't danced with Miriam. Why won't you dance with her?" He frowned slightly and caught firm hold of her hand, pulling her into his arms.
"Paul will get around to it.
He hasn't danced with anyone yet.
And he won't feel the necessity if I step in for him. I'd hazard a guess he's thinking about Tessie. He met her at a dance. It'll dawn on him soon that young Miriam needs a partner."
Paul did dance with Miriam, but he was stiff and grim and hardly spoke a word to her. Miriam was clearly perplexed. As soon as the dance was finished, he said good night and went for his horse.
"We'd better head for home, too," Michael said.
Miriam embraced Angel and whispered, "I'll be over in a few days to visit. Maybe you'll tell me what's eating that man." Angel lifted little Ruth and held her tightly, kissing her smooth baby cheek and nuzzling her neck. "Goodbye, darling. Be good." Michael lifted Angel onto the saddle and swung up behind her. His arm held her firmly as they headed home in the moonlight. Neither spoke the whole way. Angel was overwhelmingly aware of his body against hers and was confused by the sensations running through her. She wished she were walking. When she spotted the cabin through the trees, she was relieved. Michael dismounted and reached up for her. Leaning toward him, she rested her hands on his strong shoulders. Her body brushed his as he lifted her down, and she felt life coursing through her, wild, exhilarating, and unfamiliar.
"Thank you," she said stiffly.
"You're welcome," he grinned, and her mouth went dry.
When he didn't take his hands from her waist, her heart beat faster and faster.
"You've been very quiet all day," he said, pensive again.
"I've nothing to say."
"What's bothering you?" he asked, pushing the thick braid back off her shoulder.
"Nothing."
"We're on our own again." Could that be it?
He tipped her chin and kissed her. Angel felt her insides melting, her knees weakening. When Michael lifted his head, he touched her face tenderly.
I'll be in shortly.
Pressing her hand against her quivering stomach, she watched him lead the horse away. What was happening to her? She went inside the cabin and set to work on the fire. Once it was going, she looked around for something else to do to keep her mind off Michael, but everything was tidy. Elizabeth had even restuffed the mattress with fresh straw. Herbs hung from a beam and filled the cabin with their sweet, fresh scent. A jar of mustard flowers was on the table, undoubtedly placed there by Ruth. Michael shouldered their things in from the barn.
Pretty quiet around here with the Altmans gone, isn't it?
Yes.
You'll miss Miriam and Ruth most.
He set the trunk back in the corner. She was bending over the fire. He put his hands on her hips, and she straightened.
They love you.
Her eyes flickered. Let's talk about something else, shall we? She said, and stepped away from him. He caught her shoulders.
No. Let's talk about what's on your mind.
There's nothing on my mind. He waited, obviously unsatisfied, and she drew in a ragged breath. I knew better than to get close to them. She pushed his hands away and hugged her shawl about her.
You think they love you less now that they're living in their own place?
She glared at him defensively. Sometimes I wish you'd just leave me alone, Michael. That you'd just send me back where I came from. It'd be so much easier all the way around.
Because you're feeling now.
I felt before and I got over it.
You adore Miriam and that little girl.
So what?
She would get over it, too.
What are you going to do when Ruth comes over here with another fistful of mustard flowers? Show her the door? He asked harshly. She's got feelings, too. So does Miriam.
He saw by her expression that she didn't think they would come at all.
He took her in his arms, holding her there even when he felt her resistance.
I prayed unceasingly that you might learn to love, and now you have. Only you fell in love with them instead of me.
He laughed softly in self-mockery.
There were times when I wished I'd never brought them here. I'm jealous.
Her cheeks burned, and she couldn't still her racing heart no matter how hard she tried. If he knew the power he had over her, what would he do with it?
I don't want to fall in love with you, she said, pushing away.
Why not?
Because you'll just end up using it against me.
She saw she had angered him.
How?
I don't know. The truth is, maybe you wouldn't even know you're doing it.
Whose truth are we talking here? Duke's? Truth sets you free. Were you ever free with him, even for a single minute? He filled your head with lies.
And what about my father?
Your father was selfish and cruel. That doesn't mean every man in the world is the same as him.
Every man I've ever known is.
Does that include me? What about John Altman? What about Joseph Hochschild and 1,000 others?
Her face jerked in pain. Seeing her torment, he gentled. You're a bird who's been in a cage all your life, and suddenly all the walls are gone, and you're in the wide open. You're so afraid you're looking for any way to get back into the cage again.
He saw the emotions flicker across her pale face. Whatever you choose to think now, it's not safer there, Amanda. Even if you tried to go back now, I don't think you could survive that way again.
He was right. She knew he was. She had reached the end of enduring it, even before Michael claimed her. Yet, being here was no assurance. What if she couldn't fly?
Chapter 21 From the 42nd Psalm. As a heart longs for flowing streams, so longs my soul for thee. The land awakened with the coming of spring.
The hillsides were splashed with purple lupines and golden poppies, red paintbrushes, and the white of wild radish. Angel found something strange stirring inside her as well. She felt it first while watching Michael turn the earth in the vegetable garden. The movement of his muscles beneath the shirt sent a rush of warmth through her. He only had to look at her, and her mouth went dry. At night, they lay side by side, hardly touching, tense and silent. She felt the distance he put between them and honored it.
"This is getting harder to do," he said cryptically, and she didn't ask him what he meant.
Her own loneliness grew. It had to do with Michael, and the ache grew worse, not better, with time. Sometimes when he would finish reading at night and raise his head, she wouldn't be able to breathe for the look in his eyes. Her heart would beat wildly, and she would look away, afraid he would see the deep longing she felt. Her whole body spoke of it. It sang inside her like a loud chorus, filling her head with thoughts of him. She could hardly speak when he asked her a simple question.
How Duke would laugh. "Love is a trap, Angel. Stick to pleasure. It doesn't require any great commitment."
She wondered now if Michael wasn't the answer to all things for her. Contemplating that, she was afraid. At night when he turned to her in his sleep, his strong body brushing hers, she would remember the way he used to make love to her, with joyous abandon, exploring her body as he did the land he owned. She had felt nothing then. Now the lightest touch made her senses spin. His dreams were becoming her dreams. Michael opened his hand more each day, but she was frozen in fear. Why couldn't they leave things as they were? Let her stay this way. Let her still be inside herself. Let things be as they had been. Still, Michael kept pushing, gently relentless, and she held back in fear because all she could see ahead was a great unknown. "I can't love him. Oh, please, I can't." She couldn't be more than her mother, and May hadn't been able to hold on to Alex Stafford. All her love hadn't been enough to keep him from riding out of her life like the wind. Angel could still see his dark figure, cape flying, as he galloped down the road and out of her mother's life. Had he even come in person to tell Mama to pack and get out? Or had he left it to that young lackey to do it for him? She didn't know. Mama never said, and she never asked. Alex Stafford was sacred ground Angel had never dared walk over. Only Mama spoke his name, and only when she was drunk and despondent, and it had always grated like salt on a raw wound. "Why did Alex leave me?" Mama had wept. "Why? I don't understand. Why?" Mama's grief had been so great, but her guilt had been even greater. She had never gotten over what she had given up to have love. She had never gotten over him. "But I paid him back in spades, Mama. Can you hear wherever you are? I smashed him into tiny pieces the way he smashed you. Oh, the look on his face." Angel covered hers. "Oh, Mama, you were so beautiful and perfect. You were so devout. Did your rosary beads ever help you, Mama? Did hope? Love never did anything but bring you pain, and it's doing the same to me." Angel had sworn she would never love anyone, and now it was happening in spite of her. It stirred and grew against her will, pushing its way through the darkness of her mind to the surface. Like a seedling seeking the light of the spring sun, it came on. Miriam, little Ruth, Elizabeth, and now Michael. Every time she looked at him, he pierced her heart. She wanted to crush the new feelings, but still they came, slowly finding their way. Duke was right. It was insidious. It was a trap. It grew like ivy, forcing its way into the smallest cracks of her defenses, and eventually it would rip her apart. If she let it. If she didn't kill it now. "There's still a way out," came the dark voice, counseling her. "Tell him the worst of what you've done. Tell him about your father. That'll poison it.
That will stop the pain growing inside you.
So she decided to confess everything. Once Michael knew everything, it would be finished. The truth would drive a wedge in so deep between them, she would be safe forever. Michael was chopping wood when she found him. He had his shirt off, and she stood silently watching him work. His broad back was already tanned, and hard muscles moved beneath the golden skin. He was power and beauty and majesty as he swung the axe in a wide arc, bringing it down hard, splitting the log clean through. Two halves banged off the block. As he bent to set up another, he saw her. "Morning," he said, smiling. Her stomach fluttered. He looked pleased and surprised to see her watching him.
"Why am I doing this?"
"Because you're living a lie. If he knew everything, he would detest you and cast you out."
"There's no reason for him to know."
"Would you rather someone else told him? Then it will be even worse."
"I have to talk to you," she said weakly. All she could hear was the pounding of her heart in her own ears and that dark voice driving her on in desperation.
Michael frowned slightly. She was tense, worrying away at a gather in her skirt.
"I'm listening."
Angel felt hot and cold all over. She should do it.
"Yes, do it, Angel."
She had to do it. Her palms were damp. Michael took his handkerchief from his back pocket and wiped the sweat from his face. When he looked at her, her heart sank.
"I can't do it."
"Yes, you can."
"I don't want to."
"Fool, you want to end up like your mother?"
Michael studied her. She looked pale, small beads of perspiration breaking out on her forehead.
"What's wrong? Are you feeling ill?"
"Tell him and get it over with, Angel. It's what you really want, to make him let you go now, while you can still bear it. If you wait, it'll only hurt worse. He'll cut your heart out and carve it up for dinner."
"I've never told you the worst I've done."
His shoulders stiffened.
"It's not necessary for you to confess everything. Not to me."
"You ought to know, you being my husband and all."
"Your past is your own business."
"Don't you think you should know what sort of girl you've got living with you?"
"Why the attack, Amanda?"
"I'm not attacking, I'm being honest."
"You're pushing again, pushing hard."
"You should know that..."
"I don't want to hear it."
"I had sex with my own father."
Michael let out a sharp breath as though she had punched him hard. He stared at her for a long moment, a muscle jerking in his cheek.
"I thought you said he walked out of your life when you were about 3.
"He did. He came back into it later, when I was 16.
Michael felt sick. "God. God. Is there a sin this woman hasn't committed?"
"No."
"And you ask that I love her?"
"As I have loved you."
Why had she done it? Why couldn't she keep some burdens on herself?
"Did it make you feel better to throw that in my face?"
"Not much," she said dully. She turned and headed for the house, sickened at herself.
Well, it was done, finished. She wanted to hide. Her strides lengthened. She would pack a few things and be ready to leave.
Michael was shaking with anger. The idyll was over. The storm had hit. "As I have loved you, Michael. 70 times 7.
Michael cried out and sank the axe deeply into the chopping block. He stood breathing heavily for a long moment, then snatched up his shirt and shrugged it on as she strode toward the cabin. He hit the door open and saw her pulling things from the dresser he had made for her after the Altmans left.
"Don't leave it at that, Amanda. Tell me the rest of what you've done. Get it off your chest. Dump it on me. Give me all the gory details."
"Michael, beloved."
"No, I'm not listening to you right now. I'm going to have it out with her once and for all."
When she didn't stop what she was doing, he caught Angel's arm and swung her around. "There's more, isn't there, Angel?" The name was a slap in her face. "Enough, wasn't it?" she said in a tiny voice. "Or do you really need more?" He saw the emotions she was so desperate to hide, but even that didn't calm him. "Let's get all the dirty laundry out in the open at once." She drew her arm away from his disturbing touch and took his challenge. "All right, if that's the way you want it." "There was a short while when I thought I was in love with Duke. Amazing, isn't it? My whole life seemed to depend on him. I told him everything, everything that hurt, everything that mattered. I thought he'd fix it for me."
"And he used what he knew against you instead."
"You guessed it. I never gave a single thought to Duke's life outside the brownstone or what people he had for friends. Not until he came back with one he wanted me to meet."
"Be nice to him, Angel. He's one of my oldest and dearest friends."
"And in walks Alex Stafford. When I looked at Duke, I could see him laughing at both of us. Rich, isn't it? Duke knew how much I hated Stafford for what he did to my mother. He just wanted to see what I'd do about it."
"Did your father know who you were?"
Angel gave a bleak, broken laugh. "My father just stood there staring at me like I was a ghost. And you know what he said? I reminded him of somebody he used to know."
"Then what?"
"He stayed. The whole night."
"Did you ever stop to think?
I knew what I was doing, and I did it anyway. Don't you understand yet? I did it with relish, just waiting for that moment when I'd tell him who I was."
She couldn't hold his gaze. She was trembling violently and couldn't stop.
"When I did, I told him what became of Mama, too."
Michael's anger evaporated. She was silent so long he touched her. "And what did he say?"
She moved back again, swallowing convulsively. Her eyes were huge and tormented.
"Nothing. He said nothing. Not then. He just looked at me for a long time. Then he sat down on the edge of the bed and cried. He cried. He looked like an old, broken man. 'Why?' he said to me. 'Why?'"
Her eyes felt hot and grainy.
"And I told him Mama used to ask me the same thing. He asked me to forgive him, and I told him he could rot in hell."
The shaking stopped, and she felt cold inside, dead. When she looked up at Michael, he was just standing there, quiet and still, watching her and waiting for the rest of it.
"You know what else?" she said dully. "He shot himself 3 days later. Duke said it was because he owed money to everybody, including the devil himself. But I know why he did it." She closed her eyes, ashamed. "I know."
"I'm sorry," Michael said. "How many more nightmares did she have locked away inside her?"
She looked up at him. "That's the second time you've apologized for something you've got nothing to do with. How can you even look at me?"
"The same way I can look at myself." She shook her head and pulled her shawl tightly around herself.
"One more thing," she said. "It'll make a difference." Michael stood like a soldier going into battle. "I can't have children. I got pregnant twice. Both times Duke had a doctor take the baby. The second time he told the doctor to make sure I could never get pregnant again. Never, Michael. Do you understand?"
She saw he did.
He stood, stunned, alternately hot and cold. Her words had gone straight through his breastplate.
She put her hand over her face because she couldn't bear the look on his. "Anything else?" he asked quietly.
"No," she said, her mouth jerking. "I think that about does it." Michael didn't move for a long moment. Then he took the shirtwaist she had laid out.
He jammed them back into the drawer and banged it shut. Then he walked out the door. He was gone so long she went to look for him, to ask what he wanted her to do. He wasn't in the fields or in the barn. He wasn't down by the creek. She wondered if he had gone to the Altmans. Maybe he had ridden over to see Paul to tell him he was right about her, more than right. The horses were in the corral. She kept thinking of her father, and she was afraid. She thought hard and realized one other place he might have gone. She put on a coat and took a heavy blanket from the bed and headed for the hill where he had taken her to see the sunrise. Michael was there, sitting with his head in his hands. He didn't look up when she reached him. She put the blanket around his shoulders. "Do you want me to leave? I know where the road is now." Coaches even went by on occasion. "I could find my own way back." "No," he said hoarsely. She stood looking at the sunset. "Do you ever get the feeling God is playing some horrible joke on you?" "No." "Then why, when you love him the way you do, would he do such a thing to you as this?"
"I've been asking him."
"Did he say?"
"I already know."
He took her hand and pulled her down to sit beside him. "To strengthen me." "You're strong enough already, Michael. You don't need this. You don't need me."
"I'm not strong enough for what's yet to come."
She was afraid to ask him what he meant. When she shivered, he put his arm around her.
"He hasn't given us a heart of fear," he said. "He'll show me the way when the time comes."
"How can you be so sure?"
"Because he always has before."
"I wish I could believe." Crickets and frogs were making a cacophony around them. How could she have ever thought there was silence out here? "I can still hear Mama weeping sometimes," she said. "At night, when the tree branches scrape against the window, I can hear the tink of her bottle against a glass and almost see her sitting on that rumpled bed, staring out at nothing. I liked rainy days best."
"Why?"
"Men didn't come so often when the weather was bad. They'd stay away where it was warm and dry and drink up all their money, like Rab." She told him how she collected tin cans in the alley and polished them, putting them out to collect the drips from the leaky ceiling. "My own private symphony." A breeze came up. Michael brushed a wayward strand of hair from her face and tucked it behind her ear. She was quiet, drained. He was pensive. "Come on," he said, and stood. He pulled her up and held her hand as they headed home. When they entered the cabin, he rummaged in the utensils drawer.
"I'll be back in a while. There's something I want to do in the barn."
She set to work on dinner, needing to keep busy so she wouldn't have to think. Michael was driving nails into the cabin eaves. Was he tearing the place down around her? She stepped to the door while drying her hands and peered out. He was hanging metal scraps, utensils, nails, and a worn horseshoe. Stepping down a ladder rung, he ran his hand along the line of things.
"Your own private symphony," he said, and smiled at her.
Speechless, she watched him carry the ladder back to the barn. She went back inside and sat down because she was too weak to stand. She destroyed his dreams, and he made her wind chimes. When he came in, she served him supper. "I love you, Michael Hosea. I love you so much I'm dying of it." The breeze stirred the wind chimes, filling the cabin with pleasant ringing. She managed a frail thank you. He didn't seem to expect more. When he finished eating, she ladled hot water from the big iron pot over the fire to wash dishes. Michael took her wrist and turned her toward him. "Leave the dishes." When he began to loosen her hair, she could scarcely breathe. She was trembling and embarrassed. Where was her calm, her control?
He was shattering it with tenderness. Combing his fingers into her hair, he tilted her head back. He saw the fear in her eyes. "I promise to love and cherish you, to honor and sustain you, in sickness and in health, in poverty and in wealth, in the bad that may darken our days, in the good that may light our way. Tirzah, beloved, I promise to be true to you in all things until I die, and even beyond that, God willing." She stood staring at him, shaken to the core. "And what have I to promise you?" His eyes lit with gentle humor. "To obey?" He lowered his mouth to hers. When he kissed her, Angel was lost in a wilderness of new sensations. It had never felt like this, warm and wonderful, exciting and right. None of the old rules applied. She forgot everything she had ever learned from other masters. She was dry ground, soaking in a spring rain, a flower bud opening to the sun. Michael knew, and gently coaxed her with tender words, flowing over her like the sweet balm of Gilead, healing her wounds. And she flew, Michael with her, into the heavens. Earthbound once more, Michael smiled. "You're crying."
"I am?"
She touched her cheek and found a single tear. "Don't look at me like that," he said, kissing her. "It's a good sign." But when Michael awakened in the morning, Angel was gone. Part 3. Humility. Chapter 22. From Marcus Aurelius. "Because a thing seems difficult for you, do not think it impossible." The jangle of pots and pans on the side of Sam Teal's wagon reminded Angel of the wind chimes Michael had hung for her. Closing her eyes, she could see Michael's face. "Beloved. Oh, beloved." She couldn't let herself think of him. She had to forget. Better to think of what love had brought Mama and keep her head straight. The old peddler beside her hadn't stopped talking since he picked her up on the road at dawn. She was thankful for the barrage. He hadn't sold any of his stock on his trip to the mountains. His food supplies were low, and his rheumatism was paining him something fierce. Best thing that had happened to Sam Teal in the last month was seeing a pretty little thing like her sitting on a stump by the road. Sam was clean and trimmed, but worn out and bent over. Most of his hair was gone, as were his prospects, but he had kindly eyes beneath gray beetled brows. As long as she listened, she didn't have to think. "Who you running from, missy?" She pushed a loose strand of blonde hair back from her face and forced a non-committal smile. "What makes you think I'm running from someone?"
"The way you keep looking back over your shoulder. You looked mighty worried back there when I found you. I figured you must be running away from your husband."
"How did you know I was married?"
"You're wearing a wedding ring."
She covered her hand quickly and blushed. She had forgotten to take the ring off. She turned it on her finger and wondered how she was going to get it back to Michael.
"Did he mistreat you?"
Michael wouldn't think of it.
"No," she said dully.
He gave her a curious look.
"Must have done something to make you run away."
She looked away. What could she say? He made me fall in love with him? If she told this old man that Michael had never done anything but treat her with the greatest kindness and consideration, he would start asking questions. "I don't want to talk about it, Mr. Teal." She twisted the ring round and round her finger and wanted to weep.
"Sam. Call me Sam, missy."
"My name's Angel."
"Just take the ring off and throw it away if it'll make you feel better," he said.
She would never do that. The ring had belonged to Michael's mother.
"I can't get it off," she lied.
She would have to find a way to send it back to him.
Were you on your way to Sacramento?
Sacramento is as good a place as any to start over.
Yes.
Good. I'm on my way there. I'll be stopping off at a few more mining camps along the way and see if I can't sell some stock.
He urged the tired horse on.
You look wore out, Missy. Why don't you climb back in my wagon and sleep? Bed folds down from the side, he told her. Just pull that latch.
She was exhausted and thanked him for the offer. She lowered the bed down and curled up on it, but sleep eluded her. The wagon rolled and bounced along, and her mind spun. She kept thinking about Michael. He wouldn't understand why she left him, and he would be angry. She was so full of confusion. Something inside her tugged at her to go back and talk to Michael, to tell him what she was feeling. She knew that in that lay madness. Hadn't Mama poured out her emotions on Alex Stafford? Hadn't she professed her love over and over again? All love had done was destroy her pride and shame her. She couldn't stop thinking about last night. Being with Michael had made her feel replete, not empty. She had felt a rightness in Michael's arms, a sense that this was exactly where she belonged.
Your mother felt the same way about Alex Stafford, and look how that turned out.
She moaned softly and curled tighter.
If Sam Teal hadn't come by when he did, she might have weakened and gone back, and she would have clung to Michael the same way Mama clung to her father. Sooner or later, Michael would tire of her the same way Alex Stafford tired of Mama.
She thought distance would ease the pain, but it kept getting worse. Her mind and body, her very essence, longed for him. Why did I ever meet him? Why did he ever come to paradise? Why did he have to be standing on the street when I walked by that day? Why did he come back to the brothel after I drove him away? She could see his eyes, full of passion and tenderness.
I love you, he'd said. When are you going to understand I'm committed to you?
He said he loved me, Mama had wept. He said he'd love me forever. Angel could feel the tears building and fought them down. All right. She had fallen in love with Michael and shed a tear, but she had been smart enough to flee before things got too bad. She had brought more this time than just the clothes on her back. She would put it all behind her. She would go east, west, north, or south, whatever she wanted.
I'll make it, she whispered. I'll make it on my own.
Doing what? A voice mocked.
Something. I'll find something.
Sure you will, Angel. Doing what you do best.
I'll find some other way to live. I won't go back to that.
Yes, you will. What else do you know? Was it really so bad? You had food and shelter, beautiful clothes, adoration.
The dark voice kept cadence with the steady clop of the tired horses on the dusty road. When she slept, she dreamt of Duke again. He was doing all the things he used to do, and Michael wasn't there to stop him.
Sam Teal awakened her. He shared his grub with her and told her he would be coming into a camp soon.
I'm going to give it another try. If I don't sell some of these wares, I'll be busted when I get back to Sacramento. All this gear's on consignment. I don't get a penny if I don't sell something. Maybe the good Lord'll be with me this time.
He took her empty tin plate, and she watched him take it down and wash it in the creek.
The good Lord hadn't done anything for this poor old man. No more than he'd done for her.
Sam Teal gathered his things together and packed them back in the wagon. He was waiting beside it and handed her up as though she were a lady.
You'd better stay hidden inside, he advised. Some of these young gents can get pretty woolly when they see a lady.
He gave her a wry, apologetic smile.
And I'm too old to fight for you.
She touched his hand and climbed into the back. When they arrived in the camp, she listened to Sam hawk his wares. Men hooted insults and ridiculed his horse and wagon. They made disparaging remarks about his merchandise. They made worse remarks about him. Sam was dogged. More insults were hurled, and still he kept on, swearing to the quality of what he had to offer. The men were having fun tearing this poor old man down. She could hear in Sam Teal's voice that his last hope was dwindling. She knew how that felt. She knew how the soul could hurt.
"One pan's all anybody needs up here," someone called. Someone called Sam a fool.
Angel frowned. Maybe he was one, but he didn't deserve this. All he wanted was to make an honest living. Angel drew back the curtain and came out. Her appearance silenced the men in the crowd immediately.
"What are you doing?" Sam whispered. He looked scared to death. "Go back inside, missy. These gents are mean."
"I know," she said. "Let me have that pan, Sam."
"You can't beat them all off."
"Let me have the pan."
"What are you going to do with it?"
"Sell it," she said. She took the pan from his hand.
"Sit down, Sam."
Nonplussed, he did as she told him. She stepped around him and held the pan up, running her hand over it as though it was an object of great worth.
"Gentlemen, Sam knows his merchandise, but he doesn't know anything about cooking."
She smiled slightly and saw the grins coming. Some laughed as though she were making a ribald joke. She talked about chicken and dumplings, fried salt pork and gravy, scrambled eggs and bacon. When they were fairly drooling, she quietly discussed the necessity of having a quality pan to bring about a good meal. She talked of the fine cast iron, the distribution of heat, the easy handling. Sam had said it all before, but this time the men listened raptly.
"Besides all the wonderful meals you can prepare in this pan, it has other uses. When you run out of bullets and need to protect your claim, you have a weapon."
She made a mocking swing at a man who was pushing too close. The men laughed. She laughed, too, playing them.
"So, what do you say, gentlemen? Do I have a buyer?"
"Yes!"
Men started pushing forward to get closer to her. They would have bought a dented tin can from her. A fight broke out in the middle. While it was going on, she leaned toward Sam and asked him what his cost was. He named a modest amount. "Oh, I think we can do much better than that," she said, and waited for the two brawlers to be separated before she named her price. Someone complained loudly, making the others pause. Angel smiled and shrugged, her attitude saying that she didn't care whether they brought anything or not. She hung the pan back on the side of the wagon and sat down.
"Let's go, Sam. You were wrong about these gentlemen. They don't know quality when they're looking at it."
His mouth was agape. Several men protested. She looked back at them.
"You said we're asking too much," she said. "Frankly, I see no sense in trying to talk you into something your own intelligence should tell you is necessary. Sam?"
She handed him the reins. A miner held the horse's harness and told her to hold on. He had a pan to buy before she took off. Angel gave in graciously and sold every pan on the wagon. The crowd didn't start dispersing until Sam took the reins and drove down the road out of town. He was grinning and chuckling.
"You got a talent for this, missy."
"Well, I've got something," she said dryly. "It wasn't so much what you said as how you said it, and the look in your eyes as you talked. Selling a frying pan wasn't any different from selling herself, and she knew all about how to do that." She cooked their evening meal while Sam Teal counted his gold. She served him and then sat down to eat. When she set her plate aside, he tossed her something. She caught it, startled.
"What's this?" she asked, holding a leather pouch.
"Your share of what we earned today."
She glanced up in surprise.
"But the pans were yours."
"And they'd still be hanging on my wagon if you hadn't spoken up. You need a grub stake. Now you've got one."
He took an extra blanket and slept under the wagon. They headed for Sacramento at first light. They arrived at noon the second day. There was a race going on, and Sam just managed to get his wagon to one side as three riders thundered by. The street filled in after them with wagons and men. Angel could see buildings going up everywhere. The air rained with the sound of hammers and lumber wagons rolling.
"First there was the fire," Sam said as he drew the wagon into the traffic. "Then the flood. Lost most of the buildings down by the river."
He snapped the reins.
"Have you got family here?" he asked her.
"Friends," Angel prevaricated, pretending interest in the bustling activity.
"Can I take you anywhere in particular?" Sam asked, clearly worrying about her.
"No. Anywhere is fine. I'll find my own way, Sam. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself." Sam pulled up before a big hardware store.
"This is the end of the line for me."
He helped her down and shook her hand.
"I'm grateful for your company, Missy, and for your help at that last camp. I think my traveling days are over. Time I stood behind a counter. Maybe I'll set up shop and find myself some pretty little sales ladies."
Angel wished him luck and made a quick departure. She walked along the boardwalk, stepping around men who lifted their hats to her. She didn't look at anyone, her mind busy trying to figure out what she would do now that she was in Sacramento. She passed a saloon, and the riotous music sent her mind reeling back to the Silver Dollar and the palace. It seemed a lifetime ago, but the reminder brought it too close for comfort. She ended up near the river. The irony of it made her smile bitterly. Hadn't Mama ended up on the docks? And here she was gravitating toward the pier with the ships coming in. She watched people coming down the plank and crates being unloaded. Walking on, she saw buildings going up all along the street, replacing the ones that had been swept away in the flood. A couple of buildings were still in business. One was a big saloon. Angel knew if she walked through those swinging doors, she would be working in one of those upstairs rooms within the hour. Aimlessly, she continued down the street. What was she going to do? The gold Sam Teal had given her was enough to last a week or two. But what about after that? She needed to find a way to make a living for herself, and the thought of going back to prostitution was unbearable. "I can't do it anymore. Not after Michael."
"Michael's just a man like any other."
"No, nothing like the rest." A tall man with dark hair came out of a store, and her heart lurched. It wasn't Michael, but another man with his coloring and build. He was laughing with several other men as they crossed the street. She had to stop thinking about Michael. The first thing she had to do was find a place to stay, but everything she passed looked too rough or too expensive. Her mind kept betraying her and turning back to Michael. What was he doing right now? Was he looking for her, or had he given up and gone back to work in his field? She passed another brothel.
"Go on in, Angel. They'll take care of you. You'll have a room of your own and food."
Her palms perspired. It was late afternoon and getting cold. How long had she been wandering? She moved back as a man came out. He looked at her in surprise.
"Sorry, ma'am," he said, tipping his hat. He was swaying on his feet. "You shouldn't be standing outside a place like this."
"My husband's inside," she said, grasping at the first thing she could think of to get rid of him.
"Your husband?"
He looked her over and shook his head.
"What's he doing inside with someone like you at home? What's his name?"
"His name? Oh, it's Charles." As soon as the man went back through the swinging doors, shouting up the stairs for the non-existent Charles, she hurried on, crossing the street and heading up another. Men stared as she raced past them. She spotted a freshly painted sign, Hawk Shields General Mercantile, and headed straight for it like a beacon in the darkness. A heavy-set elderly woman came out with a broom and swept the stairs and boardwalk. Unsmiling, she worked diligently, swishing dirt onto the street and wrapping the broom against the boards. She glanced up when Angel stepped onto the boardwalk. "Men," she muttered with a faint smile. "Can't even use the boot scraper before tracking their mud into the store." Her gaze dropped to the tied bundle in Angel's hand. Angel gave a self-conscious nod and went inside. She looked for Joseph, but he was nowhere to be seen.
"Can I help you find something?" the woman asked, standing just inside the door, broom held like a rifle at rest.
"Carpet bags," Angel said. "A small one."
"Right over here," the woman said, and led her to a shelf against the wall. "This one's nice."
She took one and handed it to Angel. Another woman, dark-haired and robust, came out from behind the back curtain and set a box down on a counter. She wiped perspiration from her forehead.
"Joseph," she called back, "would you bring out that crate for me, please? I can't lift it."
Angel wished she hadn't come here. Why hadn't she given it a thought before plunging in? Joseph was fond of Michael. What would he say about her running off the way she had? She couldn't expect any help from him. And who were these women with him? Hadn't he said something about his mother coming and bringing him a wife?
"Do you like it?" the woman asked her.
"What?" Angel stammered. She had to get out of here.
"The carpet bag," the woman said, curious now.
"I've changed my mind." She handed it back. Joseph came through the curtain with the crate and saw her immediately. His face split with a wide smile, and she saw his quick glance around the store for Michael. Angel turned quickly and started for the door, bumping into the elderly woman.
"Excuse me," she stammered, trying to steady her as she brushed past.
"Angel! Where are you going? Wait!"
Angel didn't. Joseph slammed down the crate, swung over the counter, and caught up with her.
"Hold on," he said, his hand clamping on her shoulder. "What's going on?"
"Nothing," she said, her face hot. "I just came in to look at a carpet bag."
"So look to your heart's content. Where's Michael?"
She gulped.
"Home."
Joseph frowned.
"What's happened?"
She tilted her chin.
"Nothing's happened."
His mother came to stand with them, the broom still in her hand.
"Who is this young woman, Joseph?"
She was studying Angel with new and disapproving interest.
"The wife of a friend of mine," he said without looking away from Angel.
She wished he would stop probing her with his shrewd eyes. His hand gripped her elbow.
"Come over here and sit down and tell me what this is all about."
He dispensed with introductions quickly.
"My wife, Meribah, and my mother, Rebecca."
"Would you like some coffee?" Meribah asked, and Joseph said yes, she would.
He waved his mother off, and she went back to her sweeping, watching them surreptitiously.
"I shouldn't have come here," Angel said flatly.
"Does Michael know where you are?"
"Of course he does," she lied.
"So," he said, a multitude of statements in that one simple word.
He sat down on a barrel, still not letting go of her arm.
"You ran out on him, didn't you?"
She pulled her arm free and drew herself up in self-defense.
"It wasn't working out."
"No?"
He didn't say anything for a long moment.
"That's not too unexpected, I guess. But it's a shame."
Her defiance flagged.
"Got any ideas what a reformed soiled dove can do for a living in this town?"
she asked flippantly, and smiled her old, practiced smile. When he frowned, she figured he was probably worrying that she would ask him to give her some money.
"Never mind," she said quickly. "A bad joke." She stood. "I'd better be going."
He put his hand on her arm again.
Sit down. Mereba's on her way with the tray.
His wife served her a cup of coffee.
Angel's hands were shaking as she took it. She tried to steady herself, feeling Joseph's perusal. Mereba offered her some cake. Angel declined. Joseph's mother had finished her sweeping and joined them. Angel wished she hadn't set foot in the place. With a censure of three pairs of eyes, she felt herself withering inside. They talked about the flood and rebuilding and stocking the store. Though they didn't ask personal questions, she could feel their inquiring looks. A customer came in, and Mereba went to serve him. Another came in, and Rebecca, seeing Joseph had no intention of taking care of him, excused herself.
"Have you a room?" he asked.
"Not yet," Angel said. She raised her chin. "But it shouldn't be too hard."
"You're going to stay here," he said.
She looked past exhaustion.
"What are your wife and mother going to say to that?" she asked sardonically, unaware of the little girl lost look in her eyes. "They'd wonder more if I sent you off with no place to go. We can't offer you grand accommodations, but we can give you a clean cot and blankets and kosher food. What do you say?"
She chewed on her lip and looked at the two women. He slapped his hands on his thighs and stood.
"They won't mind. And even if they did, he intended to make sure they kept their reservations to themselves. It was late enough that he could close the store a little earlier than usual."
Angel sat with them at the upstairs dining room table. She pushed her food around on her plate, pretending to eat, but having no appetite. Mereba and Rebecca didn't ask her any probing questions, but she could feel their deep curiosity. When Mereba cleared the table, Angel rose and helped. Joseph and his mother began talking in low, agitated tones as soon as she was through the door. They stopped when she came back in for the rest of the dishes. When she stacked them, she paused.
"I don't have to stay longer than tonight," she said. "If it's going to cause trouble between you, I'll leave first thing in the morning."
"You'll stay as long as Joseph says you will," Rebecca said in a tone that invited no argument. "He's going to put your cot next to the wood stove downstairs. You'll be warm there."
Joseph set up her cot. He came back upstairs and told Mereba he was going out for a while. He would be back in a few hours. Surprised, Mereba didn't question him.
"He never goes out at night," she said as he closed the door behind him.
She took up some embroidery.
"Business?" Rebecca said, knitting rapidly.
Angel sat with the two women in the parlor. The only sound in the room was the ticking of the clock on the mantel and Rebecca's clacking needles.
"If you don't mind, I think I'll go to bed," Angel said at last.
Rebecca nodded approval. Angel closed the door behind her and paused. The two women began talking in earnest. Probably about her. She went downstairs and lay on the cot in the darkness. She slept fitfully, dreaming of Duke. Rebecca came down at dawn. Angel awakened and dressed quickly.
"You didn't sleep well, did you?" Rebecca said as she watched her gather her things.
"I was fine. Thank you for letting me stay last night."
She folded the blankets away and closed up the cot, tucking it into a narrow space between shelves. She could feel Rebecca's dark eyes watching her every move.
"Joseph says you're looking for work," Rebecca said. "We've plenty for you to do around here."
Angel straightened in surprise and faced her.
"You're asking me to work for you?"
Rebecca drew herself up.
"Unless you have something better in mind."
"Oh, no, I didn't," Angel said quickly. "What would you like me to do?"
Rebecca briskly gave her a list. Angel washed windows and swept out the store. She stacked canned goods and folded red flannel shirts. She hung tack on the walls. When men approached her, Mereba or Rebecca intercepted them, answering their questions and showing them merchandise. Rebecca asked her to carry boxes in from the storeroom and stock the shelves behind the counters. Angel worked hard, stopping for the noon meal and then returning to her labor until Joseph closed and locked the door after dusk. Rebecca handed her an envelope over dinner. "Your wages," she said simply, and Angel blinked, feeling her throat close up. She looked at Joseph and Mariba, then back at Rebecca. Rebecca nodded at her son. "She's a good worker." Angel hung her head, unable to speak. Rebecca set a dish of potatoes beside her. "Eat. You need some meat on your bones." Later that night, Angel sat on her cot, a lantern burning, and counted her earnings. She had made more in a half hour at the palace, but she had never felt so clean and proud. The next day, Rebecca asked her to measure out beans into 5-pound sacks, then tie and stack them. When she finished, Angel straightened the bolts of fabric and stood them up rather than stack them. Mariba came over and said the display looked very nice, and it would be much easier to handle the bolts that way. "Joseph just got a shipment of tubs. Would you help me bring them in? We can stack them in the back corner." Each day Rebecca gave her duties to perform, and each evening when the door was locked and the closed sign put out, Rebecca paid her. "Look what just arrived," Joseph said, patting a crate. Angel set her broom aside and tucked several strands of hair beneath the scarf covering her head. "What is it?" "Michael's stove." Her heart leaped into her throat at the mention of his name. "I'd better finish sweeping," she said. Joseph watched her for a long moment and then went back to his own work. Angel was distracted at dinner. As soon as the dishes were cleared and washed, she excused herself. Mariba came downstairs a short time later. "Joseph and Rebecca are going over the accounts," she said. She hesitated. "You hardly ate anything at dinner. Are you feeling well?" "I'm fine." Angel couldn't stop thinking about Michael. As long as she was moving and working, she could hold the longing at bay. She looked at the big crate against the wall. Word would have to be sent, and then Michael would come and get his stove. "I'll have to leave before he comes." Mariba sat on a box and warmed her hands near the Franklin stove. "You're thinking about leaving, aren't you?" Angel glanced up.
"Yes."
"You're not happy with the work?"
"It's not the work, it's..."
What could she say? Sighing, she nodded toward the big crate. "Michael's stove. He'll come for it soon."
"And you don't want to see him?"
"I can't."
"Was it so terrible?"
"It was so wonderful. Too wonderful to last. It's just better if I don't."
"Where will you go?"
She shrugged.
"San Francisco? I don't know. It doesn't matter."
Mariba folded her hands in her lap.
"Joseph thinks a great deal of your husband."
Angel nodded and looked away.
"I know."
Just his name roused so many feelings inside her. She thought the longing would diminish. She thought distance would dissolve her feelings for him. She had been away from him for 3 weeks, and she ached for him more now than she had the night she left. "I was married once before," Mariba said, "to a very difficult man. My mother died when I was young, and Papa wanted me well settled before his time came. So he picked a man who, for all outward appearances, was prosperous and kind. My husband was neither. I used to pray that God would deliver me from him. And he did." She paused. "Then I learned how cruel life can treat a woman alone." "I've been alone all my life," Angel said simply. "If your husband is even half the man Joseph thinks he is, you should go back and work things out with him." Angel retreated.